And then tonight is the round table, and we have Sarah. Sarah, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Wade, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
And our guest, back for part two, how are you doing tonight? We got Mr. Jim Brown.
Kevin, I am hanging in there, sir. Ready to answer questions and help some veterans.
All right. Well, let's first get off and let's go into the topic that we were getting into last time about the birth defects. Because I know me and Wade are really wanting to understand some of the stuff that our kids are going through.
Okay.
So.
Well, one of the biggest things that I've run into as far as birth defects is the fact that it's come out of nowhere, literally, for a majority of the people that were deployed. You have people who don't have a hereditary family history of any kind of birth defects for generations going back. And then all of a sudden, boom, and not just, you know, small things. We're talking catastrophically huge things. I mean, we're talking things like this.
No.
Damn.
The little guy's name is Jace. This was put out by Life magazine in 1995. I don't know if you can see it clearly or not.
Yeah.
His father was a Gulf War veteran. He was vaccinated with the majority of the same things that we were. He was forced to take the PB pill as well, the anti-nerve agent pill. He was exposed to the downwind from the oil well fires. He was exposed to depleted uranium. He was exposed to the downwind chemical agent hazards from the bomb WMD facility. So basically, he got everything you could possibly throw into a 5-gallon bucket and just tossed at it. So there's really no way to say it was this, it was this, it was this. But he had no family history whatsoever of birth defects. He had no issues, health issues prior to going to the war. He's one of the healthiest people you could throw a stick at. And then he and his wife had Jace. And it was, the word devastating doesn't even come close to this. It was out of the clear blue. The doctors didn't know how to explain it to him and his wife. There was no warning, no signs that this was going to happen. Usually you get some sort of change in the woman and just nothing, absolutely out of the clear blue. They approached the Department of Defense and the VA both, and they were told, we don't know anything about this. We've never heard or seen anything this bad before. We can't help you. You're on your own. Have a fun time. And, you know, here's hoping everything goes good for your kid. So they just got them off. This is a tragic story that is repeated thousands of times. This is not the only case. The reason that Life magazine picked this up is because it was such a prevalent thing. And again, you have people who don't have a history of something of this nature, and then you have this happen. You know, there has to be some accountability. There has to be some way of being able to address this. But for the past 3+ decades, the Department of Defense and the VA have both thrown their hands in the air and told all of us veterans, either we don't know or we don't care. And that's, in a nutshell, pretty much it.
And see, on top of all that, this is what I want everybody to understand, is Jim is, to me, very a lot more knowledgeable about this than what I am. But me and Wade both have daughters that we're trying to understand ourselves that suffer from what we came home with. Because my daughter, it was about the age of 16, started fainting, started having issues. They diagnosed her with POTS, and they diagnosed her with EDS. And then she had unexplained bleeding. And so that's, you know, that's the problem that I'm having with my daughter. And so it's like when we go to Disney, she'll go to her doctor and talk to the doctor and, you know, make sure all of her medication and everything's set right so she don't pass out standing in line. I mean, Wade I mean, I know you want to chime in on this.
Yeah, I'll use my own daughter for an instance. I don't know if she wouldn't mind. She's been around this long enough. She's 19. I've taken her down to Ross Camp with me. Same thing with the patient coordinator down there. She got to talking with him. His daughter had almost identical symptoms to what she has. But at 19, she was diagnosed with a petit mal epilepsy around the first grade time. She dealt with that for a few years with medication. Eventually she grew out of it. I'm not 100% sure that it's gone, but the doctor says she doesn't need to take medicines. Last 6 months, she's had a colonoscopy, an endoscopy due to gastrointestinal issues, diagnosed with anorexia, general anxiety disorder. And then the last one was the, I don't even know if I'm going to say this right, but postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. No clue what that is, but doesn't sound good to me.
Yeah, it's called POTS. Yeah.
POTS, correct. Yes.
I'm familiar with that. Yeah.
I do know that the Go For Babies and Parents Facebook group, she did a very unscientific random survey amongst parents so they could chime in. And I just kind of sat back and watched and just kind of read through the comments. And the biggest thing that I really saw was gastro issues as well as the depression and anxiety. Why? I don't know. But that's just kind of, you know, kind of what I saw personally that ranked up there higher. I do know, and I'm sure Jim probably knows about it more than I do. There is a university, maybe it's the Boston University, Jim, you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Who are going to start doing testing. But from my understanding, that's going to be more of a survey question type of testing.
Yeah, to start off with, yeah.
Yep, and I'm sure that they were absolutely flooded as soon as that was, you know, announced, which understandably, I wanted so bad to jump on as well. And again, Jim, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I just don't see the difficulty with Dr. Haley. They say that they have recognized the biomarkers in the blood. Mm-hmm. Great. So if you draw the veteran's blood and you draw the child's blood, somewhere in that blood, they're going to have reference biomarkers to each other if that child was affected. I mean, it's a generalized DNA. If they can recognize the damaged DNA in the veterans, they can recognize the damaged DNA in the children. And I just, because of the longevity and the potential that this could do to the government, I just don't think they're going to chase it. And it's going to be up to the veterans, you know, to, you know, basically chase themselves. That's what I've always said about research. I'm done doing research with me. I'm good to go. But if it's going to help myself, my daughter, and the other kids, then, you know, I'm willing to try anything.
Absolutely. On the biomarker end, a semen test that was done in 1995 by Dr. Bill Boone gave us this. I'm trying to make sure it doesn't shine here.
I see it.
This was a test done specifically to find out what was causing the burning semen that a lot of us were experiencing. The biomarkers that you're seeing, you notice my name is on this. See if I can get it centered up for you here. I was one of the test subjects that was in this. They found a biomarker in us that was able to define, for want of a better way of putting this, the trigger mechanism, what changed in us. And this was in 1995. The technology has been around for decades, literally decades. So what you're talking about, being able to take the parents and the children, matching up the biomarkers, trending it, and seeing, is this something that's passed from one generation to another through genetics, or was it just exposure to the similar environment, let's say equipment or uniforms that we brought home, the things that we were wearing while we were over there? If there was something on that that changed us, would that be something that also changed the children, the spouses, that sort of thing? With a biomarker like that from 1995, we should at this point be able to determine, as you were saying, is this something that we can identify and say it stops with this generation? Is it something that's going to propagate further on? In World War II, there were exposures to mustard agent on the battlefield. Some was on purpose back here in the United States, the Manbrake test, things like that, where we exposed our own troops to dusty mustard agent to find out just how bad it was. Trust me, it was bad. The genetic alteration that that caused was seen in the children, the children's children, and on down the line. This is something that's known. It isn't a mystery science. It isn't, you know, go, oh my gosh, what's going on? We've got this dead bang. They don't want to tell us what's going on. That is the bottom line. If they really get down to the brass tacks bit and say, look, you get exposed to this, it causes this, this is what happens. If we intervene early enough, we might be able to mitigate the circumstances. We might be able to either reduce or eliminate the effects. But if we wait, what you got is what you got. If we nail them on something like this, they're going to have to admit all the way back to World War II, Korea, Vietnam, every engagement that we've had, the exposures that they can put people into in the future, unavoidable ones. That literally is the linchpin in this entire thing. Once you get behind the wall of the Department of Defense and the VA and you start talking directly to the people that work in the labs, not the bureaucrats and those idiots, no. I'm talking about the people that are doing the nuts and bolts, the beakers, the tubes. When you talk to those people, they'll tell you flat out, yeah, we've been able to do this for basically half a century. We don't understand why they're not letting us do it. The people in the labs, that's their job. They want to be able to do this more often than not. I mean, you run into a bad apple anywhere, sure. But by and large, the bureaucrats are keeping them from telling anybody. If you can get your actual test results and you can look at the test results yourself, the actual paperwork, you'll see the L for low, the H for high. You can see there are issues. And again, it's right here in black and white, quite literally.
Right.
1995.
And one thing is with a lot of troops, sailors, military, any of them, a lot of them, this is a touchy subject about burning semen. Okay. I, for one, have it. I have the problem. And this doesn't, it affects all of us. And a lot of guys, we need to come out and start talking about it. We need to figure out what is going on with it. But when I talked to you earlier, you kind of go through the process of what causes the burning semen on that place.
Okay. Well, the tests that were done on us in 1995, just to give you a short background on that, a huge number, and we're talking at the time, several thousand people were talking to either their congressman, their senator, their mayor, some local individual, and telling them, look, I'm a veteran, I'm sick, the Department of Defense is not helping me, the VA is not helping me, I earned this, I'm not getting help. Could you please intervene on my behalf? Eventually, that rolled uphill to the point where the secretary of the VA started realizing, we've got a huge problem here and we're going to have to do something about it. Word went from that to the head of the VA committee in the Senate, which turned out to be Senator Rockefeller, a Democrat who was interested in doing something instead of just talking about it, which was majorly big help for us. The Senate Veterans Affairs Committee between 1993 and 1996 was the driving force behind getting that process moving. The majority of the things that happened, changes in the public law, the Senate hearings, getting people on the record happened during that time. One of the things that came out of that was the semen testing that I was talking about earlier. That was one of the test subjects in. The test itself was done in Greenville, South Carolina. It was by Dr. Bill Boone, and he had come up with a not really new way of being able to go about it, but a repeatable, more consistent method to be able to figure out how to look at the parameters of the samples. So it wasn't just some individual who was sitting at a table and maybe counting things correctly, maybe not counting things correctly. If they'd had lunch, yay. If they hadn't had lunch, well, maybe they didn't do so well. This machine was able to do it consistently, and he proved that it was really a good thing to have. So he used that, processed the samples, and found out three different things. One, the reduction in protein that the veterans were producing was reducing the amount of polyamines that we had in our system. That increased production of ammonia, which means that whenever the ejaculate was produced and came in contact with the mucous membrane of the interior of the vagina in the female, it would cause a burning sensation. I mean, it's straight up science. It's not a mystery. It's not, I hate to say it this way, but it's about as basic chemistry and basic science as it gets. Dr. Boone was able to produce this and reproduce this and reproduce this result. And excuse me, through the testing that he was doing, he was able to say, okay, we know this is what's causing it. Now, if you add on top of that, the fact that you have that kind of an environment that your genetic material is existing in the males, eventually, for want of a better way of putting this, imagine taking a raw egg and slowly adding a little acid to it. Eventually, you would get what should be a clear outside and a healthy yolk in the center. It will eventually become to denature, it will harden, it will change. That's what's happening to our sperm, our semen. It's literally cooking in our own juices, for want of a better way of putting it. So if they had intervened on our behalf as soon as they found out that we were sick, it's a 50-50 whether this would have been a real change that could have been made, but for at least some of us, it could have improved our chances to have a normal life and normal children. Again, they refused to even acknowledge it was a problem. They stuck their heads in the sand, hoped we would either die and go away, or we would just not be smart enough to figure it out. I don't know, pick your poison on this. But bottom line, there are answers. Dr. Boone produced these in 1995. The Department of Defense was part of the funding through the VA committee for that 1995 testing, which means the Department of Defense and the VA both knew about this as it was happening. They got the same test results. They saw this. They also saw this.
The hell is that?
This
what
is
a micro- looking at there.
This is a microorganism that was found in the semen of each of the veterans, myself included, that had the burning semen issue.
It's like a
never
damn
been
worm.
Identified. I'm sorry, what?
Looks like a damn worm.
pretty close. The closest thing we've been able to figure out is it's either L. tropica or L. donovani. It's a type of leishmania. Leishmaniasis. It's a...
That's all shit over my head. I don't know what the hell that means. It's something bad, clearly. I mean, it's
that,
just...
Does that come from the sandfly fever?
Yeah. It's pretty close to that. It's caused by spirochete. It's very similar in a way to some of the types of illnesses that doctors are familiar with over here. But since it comes from places like the African continent or Southwest Asia, it's not really something you run into in the United States. They can blow it off and say, yeah, we've never heard of it before. No big deal. It's in the medical books. It's diagnosable and it's treatable. Again, if you catch it, you can treat it. Go on about your business, but they decided.
So they're basically, are we saying that the burning semen is in part what caused the defects?
Yes.
They can't acknowledge it, or they won't acknowledge it, because like you explained, then it's a It's a snowball.
Right. Once they admit to one, it follows one, and keeps going. The biggest problem that they seem to have is not just in admitting it, but admitting that they knew ahead of time that this was a potential, and they did absolutely not a thing to prevent it. Once they started seeing signs of it, they didn't do a thing to be able to follow up on it or to treat it.
So I'm curious, Jim, what brings forward somebody? I mean, humor me, because I have no idea. How do we come to even realize a person has burning semen? Because the woman went in and complained, or the husband and however the connection, husband, girlfriend, husband, wife, whatever. I mean, how does that even come to be known?
Oh, you know.
I mean, how do we get down to that point?
It started in veterans groups. We got to the point where, again, the DOD and the VA were not doing anything to help us. We would see each other sitting in the waiting room and start talking to each other. I mean, at times that's literally the way it goes. So you start talking to somebody, you get to know them, and eventually you get to the point where you can actually broach a subject and say, look, I don't know if you've ever heard of this. Maybe I'm crazy. I just need to tell somebody that would understand, you know, somebody who's worn the brown t-shirt, somebody who understands crap happens out in the field. You might bring it home. You might not. At some point, you just got to break down the walls and start talking to somebody. And as soon as you do, and you start talking to that other person, you can see it in their eyes. They're experiencing the same damn thing.
And that
they were in the same boat. They were scared to talk about it too. And you think, as military people, we're taught, beat your chest, get out there in the front and pound sand, do what you got to do and just drive on. Don't worry about any problems. We'll take care of you when it comes time, but just do your job, get in there and get out. We did get in there. We got back out. We did our job. And then we got dropped like a hot potato. We got told, it'll be fine for us. You, the soldiers, the troops, whatever. You live or die, who cares? Right. They sent enough body bags over there to send all of us home anyway. That was literally the plan. When I was at Port of Damam, I saw 5 13-foot wooden cubes come off of one of the boats back there. Piqued my interest. We were taking care of the first Cavs Humvees and trailers at the time. So I was like, okay, what's in the boxes? One of the guys that was doing the offloading just came over, looked at me, gave me a really, really strange look and said, those boxes are full of body bags. That's a hard thing to see at the beginning of the war. This was September of 90 when I saw this happen right in front of me. I mean, we started joking about it, saying, okay, maybe we should go over there and, you know, hey, I want to use this one, you know, pick mine out ahead of time or something. How do you get past something like that? How do you talk to somebody about something like that that's never, ever going to experience something like that? I mean, even other troops that had never deployed, never been in that position. How do you get that kind of thing across? It's the same thing as something like this. You just have to do it. At some point, you got to break the walls.
First time I ever heard of, and I've told Kevin this, first time I ever heard of the burning semen thing, and it's been months ago, when we were talking to a Marine that came on, probably our age, and I don't even know how it came out in conversation. And I'm like, what? I never heard of it. And I'm like, really? And yeah. And so it's one of those conversations you just don't jump into with the first person you meet, you know, veteran or not, you know.
Bro, it's really hard when you go on a first date and say, hey, I just want you to know I got burning semen, and you know, but you know,
brace yourself,
I hate to say it like that, but I mean,
brace yourself, this might hurt a little bit.
Brace yourself,
for the love of Pete.
Yeah, you know,
the doctors always say, hey, here's a little pinch, right?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, every once in a while, y'all know what I mean? I mean, this is actually driving me crazy, you know? Over time, you just got to know where the carrot goes. Oh, y'all.
So I got a question on that one.
Wait, how did you not catch the carrot joke?
I got the main carrot joke. So my question is, you it's the female that experiences the burning, but see, you're saying that it's caused from the ammonia concentration.
Yeah.
Now, does the male have any feeling like through the urethra or anything like that?
Usually when the male is involved in this, the body has already gotten to the point where the epithelial on the interior of the urethra has thickened to the point where there's really not that much in the way of sensation. The urethra itself and the tunnel, once it thickens past a certain point, that's also one of the reasons why you have weird stream, a lot of backup and a lot of pressure. Also leads to erectile dysfunction. Sorry, change of weather's kicking my butt. It leads to erectile dysfunction, leads to an extreme amount of, let's call it, discomfort, as if somebody has got a pulpit Bible sitting on your lap and is pressing down on the private parts for the guy. And there are a lot of different symptoms that go along with this, but it's all centered around the exact same area. And if you get a chemical imbalance in one area of the body, it's going to be in the rest of the body as well. One of the other things that is kind of along the same line, when you have...
Who's laughing? Is that you laughing, Simon? Or it's Wade, who's laughing?
Probably. Yeah, well, hey, you know, you guys wanted to jump in. Here we are.
No, I can't see them. I can only see you, and I can't see the others because I can only see the person talking.
I mean, on top of this topic, before you're about to say, I think I know where you're going with the next one. Burning semen is a very hard topic for us to talk about. But all of us need to come and talk about it. So that way people out there don't feel alone in this. But go ahead, Jim. I want you to finish. I just want to throw that in there.
Oh, that's all right. The only thing I want to add to that was, if you have a change in the body chemistry where you're getting hyper acidification of the blood or any of the other fluids in the body's going to attempt to de-acidify that by stripping calcium off of the bone. Now, if you have too much of that go through, you end up with kidney stones and gallstones. You end up with a lot of other urinary tract infections. I mean, it's a cascade effect. And picture somebody that's in their 20s or 30s who has the urinary tract of a 90-year-old. That, in essence, is what we're talking about. You're kind of cooking the egg by pouring the acid on top of it, but you're not actually cooking it to the point where you can make it useful. You're just doing damage to it.
Would that go along with the frequent urination as well?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Bladder infections, UTIs, you get really weird infections. Matter of fact, one of the things that goes along with this is seeing a pink fungal, for want of a better way of putting it, type of coating that shows up in the toilet.
Okay.
It's almost like, have you ever seen the holiday version of Saran Wrap? It's like a pink.
Yeah.
Almost the same color as that. And you get that in the toilet bowl.
That would scare the hell out of me.
Yeah, it's not fun. It's not fun. But if your body chemistry changes past a certain point, it starts to support certain types of yeasts, Candida albicans, candidiasis, if you want to call it that. You get yeast infections really easy, or the guy has these. It doesn't affect the guy in the same manner, but you transfer it to the female, and then she gets the urinary tract infections. So she gets these. The guy seems to get nothing, and I got to tell you, there are a lot of people who get really, really weirded out by the fact that only one sexual partner is continually getting these urinary tract infections that are usually considered to be STDs. So marital strife, you're talking a lot of questions being swung around, people asking, so, you know, where are you getting these things from? Because we're doing things, we're having sex, I'm not getting it, but you are. Mm. The guy is producing this internally. His body can handle it and keep it down to a low roar, so to speak. His immune system can keep it from becoming a full-blown kind of thing. But introduce that to a person that is new to, and suddenly it's a breeding ground, and they actually get a full-blown infection.
And you're right, 100%. I mean, I know 100% on that. And we got about 10 minutes, but I want to talk about the...
I got one more for Jim on this, if we can. I got one more good one.
All right, sure. A good one? Okay, I want to hear it.
So we talked about the kids as well. My scenario, I'm just going to throw it out there just because it's, I don't mind sharing. Okay. So my ex, I was with her for approximately 12, 13 years. Mm-hmm. Her ex-husband prior, he was Navy in Gulf War, and she was with him for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. Now, they did have three essentially healthy kids. He is considerably messed up. I mean, just considerably. They still have yet to give him a diagnosis for a neurological brain disorder. Would somebody like my ex also be affected, particularly being, you know, that's 20 some years that she had been infected. So, and the only reason I ask that is because she does have just a number of just weird out of this, not necessarily weird, but out of this kind of unusual health issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, it can depend on the person's genetics. It really depends on timing, exposure, and what type of exposure they happen to have, how their immune system can deal with it. Okay, imagine exposing somebody to a healthy, well, anti-healthy, a very heavy dose of pesticides. You have some people who are going to react immediately. They're going to be coughing, choking. They're going to have tightness of the chest. I mean, sweating, immediate, really noticeable symptomology. There are other people, 5-10 hours later, they might get a little cough or something, and then they'll go on about their business. But 5-10 years down the road, suddenly their immune system just drops out from under them. If you look at the World War II veterans and the Vietnam veterans, this literally is a showcase of what I'm talking about. You have every 10 years, a new crop of people who become sick. That seems to be pretty much the ballpark. It's usually between 8 and 11, so let's just say 10. But each time those people become sick, they come forward with almost the exact same symptomology as the people who produced the last cycle. And the one that comes after them will be almost exactly the same. Picture throwing 5 people off a 10-story building. You end up with, obviously, what happens at the end, but some people may actually die of a heart attack on the way down. Some people may scream. Some people may stiffen up. Everybody reacts differently to a given situation. It's exactly the same thing with the body. You know, when somebody says medicine is an actual science, there's a lot of plus or minus and leeway. You give a headache medicine to one person, it works like a charm. You give it to another person, nothing. I mean, there are people that can take pain medication that would literally knock me out for a week, and they do this every day. So when it comes to the variation, the best thing that a person can possibly say is, okay, I've been exposed to this. This is most likely going to go in this direction. What are the signs and symptoms? How can I mitigate that? How can I slow it down or even eliminate it? If there's a way to be able to intervene in something like this, then by all means, do. And just because you're not sick today, as Kevin said on our last session, just because you're not sick today doesn't mean you're not going to be sick tomorrow because you have been exposed.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And it sounds fatalistic. It sounds like the biggest downer you could possibly throw on top of something. But, you know,
it sucks.
We've been at it for 3+ decades, and it's been bearing that out.
But before we go, I just want everybody to know I've had over 38 kidney stones. That's what my body produces. I have kidney stones all the time. I have peed out more babies.
Is that why you're so grumpy?
Yeah, you know, I can still smile about it. My biggest one was an inch and a half. It ripped out my whole inside.
Oh.
And let me tell you, I crawled into the hospital, and that lady looked over the desk, and she goes, "Baby, are you okay?" And I said, "I had a kidney stone." And I knew it was big. Like, when my wife takes me to the hospital, I look at her. I said, "Oh, it's okay. It's not going to be a big one." So they end up putting tubes and stuff like that and got everything bigger so the kidney stones will pass faster. And it actually does work. I can't believe it. They opened me up.
Oh, yeah.
And everything. But before we go, Sarah, do you have any questions? Because you are actually, I want everybody to know, Sarah is the one that introduced me to Jim. And thank you so much. This man is full of knowledge, and he literally, I have learned more from him in these two sessions than I have doing this whole podcast this whole time. But Sarah, do you have anything you would like to add?
Well, yeah, Jim, he's a definite plethora of information, and he has an amazing abundance of letters and research on his Facebook groups that I highly suggest that you look into for any further questions. Some of that research, I believe we've put on operationtruth.net. But my question to you, Jim, is a couple different ones.
Okay.
The first one is, concerning burning semen, have they seen any pattern or data to conclude are female veterans or female service members having anything equivalent to that, and seen any patterns of genetic mutations passed on to their children? Since we're born with our eggs that we're going to have for the rest of our lives, it seems that, you know, there's a possibility that those genetic mutations, those chemicals, could have passed through those ovaries and had possible, you know, mutations for the remainder of our genetic lineup. And then the second question is that I was speaking to a few of the family members that their fathers were in Vietnam. They believe that as a result, they are at higher risk for other concerning genetic mutations. For example, I've met more than one individual that had a vaccine injury to the COVID-19 vaccine who had Vietnam parents or, you know, fathers who, as a result, were, they believe, more susceptible to vaccine injury. So have you seen anything in the research data to confirm either of those?
On the first one, the equipment is basically the same in a male and a female. The ovaries and the testes is the same, the fallopian tube and the... basically, it's the same equipment, just moved around. With the females, sorry,
what? The eggs being born, you're born with the eggs that you'll have for the rest of your life. Where in the male, they reproduce what they need at a lot faster pace.
Right. Well, the issue that we've seen is a hardening of the fallopian tubes and more ectopic pregnancies, a lot of cysts along the same lines. And basically, where the males are having a problem with the testes being bathed in a highly acidic liquid for long periods of time, the females have it only, I hate to say it this way, but periodically. The interior of the lining becomes hardened, and you end up with endometriosis, endometrial tissue. Usually if that penetrates from the interior lining to at least the second layer, you end up with either a cancerous growth or a cyst, something of that nature. If an egg attempts to attach to the uterine wall, that's been, again, for want of a better way of putting it, acid washed, then either there's a limited connection or no connection, in which case you get spontaneous abortions. You don't get a full attachment, which means a massive amount of bleeding, simply because where the attachment happens to the wall is either partial and open, or it's flattened and the nutrients don't get through. If you don't have nutrients passing through to the embryo is not going to survive. Or if it does survive, then it's not going to thrive and it's not going to be full term. You also see a lot of early births, miscarriages. I mean, it's a long list to say the least, but if you take the equipment that the male and females have in common and you say, okay, this is your urethra on the male, this is the vaginal cavity on the female, you're kind of equating the two together. The eggs already being there in a way is kind of a saving grace in a 50-50 way, where the males are producing the sperm on a regular and constant basis, as you said, that means that there's more of a possibility of replicate of fate. In other words, a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy, and eventually you get genetic drift, you get breaks, chromosomal drift, to say the least. It's just a recipe for disaster all the way around. And it's, imagine, this is the way it was put across to me years and years ago. I'm not taking credit for this, but it was one of the clearest things that really told me what was going on. If you sprayed Windex into the urethra of a guy or into the vagina of a woman, this is the effect you would have, simply because of the effect that that chemical would have on the tissues that are in there. Imagine that coming from the inside of the person rather than being injected into them. We are producing the environment that this is occurring in, and it may change as the course of years change, but at the same time, it's still going to be the same stuff. You might get an increase in toxicity levels, or you might have a decrease, and it may be for an extended period of time, or it may hit you all at once. The variability depends almost entirely on the individual that is happening to, but it's the same basic cause. On the Vietnam vets, they are seeing a lot of this being passed on to the next generation. You're talking grandparent, parent to child by this point. Some may have great-grandchildren. It depends on when they had children. But it is passing through the generations. And it is something that's recognized by the VA and DOD. You know, yeah, yay, they finally figured out, oh, there's a problem. Agent Orange, the vaccines that they were given or forced to take, the anti-malarial pills that they were forced to take as well, bad food, bad water, the bad environment, all of these things have essentially the same effect on the human body. And unless there's some sort of a corrective method to put the chemistry of the body back into its neutral territory, you're going to see this every time.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Man. Well, I'm glad everybody's positive tonight after that. You
know? Hey, nothing but smiles here, brother.
Hey, man. Hey, you know what? But this is what everybody needs to know. This is what everybody needs to know, what the vets go through, so we can stop it. This needs to stop. The whole thing needs...
Well, Kevin, what it all comes down to, is the importance of finding the root cause, doing that root cause analysis. Yep. And furthering the reason for funding on this critical research, because that's the only way we could find answers.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's
but
just
I'm
it.
I'm scared with Haney, because he already, it came out, the root cause is sarin. Well, what about these people that weren't deployed, but they did get the shots? What about these people that were on a boat versus those who were in Kamasia?
Right.
They got to find that common denominator. And I just think with that last study that came out, I just really think that the funding is going to start, dwindling away. Yeah. And these these research places, as much respect as I have for them, I would think that now that now they should be wanting to concentrate on the kids. And it just doesn't seem like it's happening. Like you said, I've been doing this, Jim. I mean, I've seen your thing a long time ago, and I've been doing this since 95 as well. I found my original Gulf War registry exam form. I look and see what the new one looks like, and it's night and day.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean,
I was told to go get another Gulf War registry, and I'm still currently waiting over three years on the waiting list to get into it.
You should be able to go to a primary care physician to be able to do that, though. The VA does allow for medical medical testing, medical records to come from other doctors.
I mean, we have a coordinator. It was something with her email that I was going to be placed, because it wasn't for a comp and pen claim. I was going to be placed at the back of the line. Huh. And so, and I filed a complaint on that. I mean, at the 2 year mark.
Yeah.
just to be difficult, I guess. I just thought it was, you know, I just think it was appropriate.
No, it's not. Six months is the wait. Six months is the maximum wait before you should be able to do an appeal to any of the VAs.
Yeah.
Honestly, and this is something I've been screaming from day one. When I was reposted down at Fort Gordon, Georgia, when I came back from the war, one of the things that happened to me really clarified the mismanagement, the actual stupidity of how VA and DOD do not understand what it is they're supposed to be doing for us, or if they do understand, they just don't care. I got sick when I was doing, let's call it what it was, soldier stakes. You know, our unit was doing its usual backflips. I'm standing outside talking and making sense to everybody around me. And then next thing I know, I'm waking up in the back of an ambulance being told, oh, you blacked out. You just fell over on your feet. I go to a DOD hospital, Eisenhower Hospital on Fort Gordon. There's literally beds everywhere that are empty. We have people walking around, you know, nothing to do, nobody to see, but that's their place of duty. Why doesn't the VA make use of those facilities? I was military, you were military. It matters not a damn if you were Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine, Coast Guard. I don't care. You put on the uniform, you go to a military hospital, they'll treat you the same, no matter if it's here or over in Korea. We've got empty beds. We've got people just walking around. They're getting paid. There's no such thing as overtime in the military. You get paid whether you sit on your ass 24/7 or if you're running in place 24/7. The pay is exactly the same, and it sucks. But it's the same thing. There's no extra cost involved in doing this. Proof of the pudding on this is, if you have a post, a base, or any military installation that's going to do any kind of a blood drive, the Red Cross can show up at the front gate and say, excuse me, I'd like for you to get all the blood you possibly can for us. And then they can spin on their tiny little heels and walk away. The military people in the medical facilities will bring in the soldiers. It's kind of mandatory. We all have to go. I see the smiles. You all know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. We all have to go. You put out our arms. We get that tiny little cup of orange juice and what they call a cookie. Sure. Mm-hmm. And then we go right back on duty. Why can't they do exactly the same thing where our troops are concerned with veterans? The beds are in.
Right.
The medical personnel are there. The staff is ready. Do it, people.
I agree with that. I totally agree with that. 110. I mean, that makes perfect sense and everything.
Yeah, which is why they don't do it. Yeah.
Well, that's a really good point. I didn't think about it like that. But but I guess the last thing that I want to put into this is I appreciate everything you do, Jim. I do. I appreciate 110%.
I appreciate you being here, bro.
Hey, I mean,
I appreciate you being here.
I've learned so much from listening to you and talking to you. And I'm sure we're going to have you plenty of times more up on the program and everything. But I'm going to give John Do you have anything you have left to say?
No, I think probably the quietest I've been on any interview because I know nothing about this subject matter really at all. So, you know, and I said beforehand, I said, hey, Wade, hey, Sarah, you know, no, I appreciate Jim, everything you're doing. And, you know, I'm glad we're all able to communicate and get the information that, you know, again, we said it 1,000 times, it's vets helping vets. You know, you don't know what you don't know until you communicate.
Right. Sarah, do you have anything else?
Yeah, just piggybacking on what John said, you don't know what you don't know. And a lot of people, it's hard for them to understand if they're not going through it themselves. And those that don't understand throw up a lot of fear of what they don't understand. And instead of trying to be more understanding and compassion, they would rather deny and gaslight. And there's too many of us in our own veteran community that will stand up and say, no, I don't believe you, just because of their own bias and judgment. And what we really need to do is be more open-minded, be understanding that the U.S. government is capable of doing some horrendous things that they need to be held accountable for. And this is how we do it, by standing together and fighting till the mission is complete.
Oh, absolutely.
I agree. Wade?
I think you're right. I think we need to have Jim back. Just by going over his Facebook page, he's very knowledgeable in a lot more things than just the medical aspect. One thing that I've noticed a lot on Facebook is everybody's asking, how do I do this? I've never done it before. They're just kindly coming full circle. You know, have Jim, you know, A to B to Z on what these people who have never done anything as far as filing a claim, what they need to do. Come up with 2 topics to discuss, break it in half, get Jim on here, and, you know, just go through it. I think that'd be great.
Okay.
I totally agree with that.
I can cover that. No worries.
Awesome. And so at our next roundtable, which would be in about 3 weeks to a month, would you be willing to come back and let's go over that?
Oh, absolutely. You tell me when, I'll be there, bro.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. And everything. But, you know, the last thing that I would like to say is for, you know, Sarah and Wade, you know, thank y'all for being on the roundtable. Y'all make the roundtable perfect. And
absolutely.
And love being here, man.
Yeah. And Jim, I can't thank you enough. And of course, my co-host, my bald man, John.
Yeah, thanks to everyone. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I really appreciate everybody listening, and you know, everybody have a great night. Thank you. Thank you for listening to Go For Side Effects. If you have any stories you would like to share or just have any comments or questions, please email me at kevinsimon@goforsideeffects.com. Just to let all of our listeners know, we have opened an online store. All proceeds will go to helping veterans connect. The link will be in the description below.